So Frankie, who are we canceling today?
I guess we're canceling Taylor Swift, but I feel conflicted about that, so let's talk about it.
Maybe the whole Taylor Swift cinematic universe.
Yeah, I could do with less media attention on Taylor Swift.
Hey everyone, I'm Caitlin Burns, and you're listening to Cancel Me Daddy, the show where we take a closer look at all the panic around cancel culture with thoughtful analysis and verbal shitposting. Joining me on the pod today is my very good friend, Frankie De La Creta. They're a freelance writer and, from what I understand, a sort of undercover Taylor Swift expert, and I'm very excited to get into this. So for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you or your work, like, what's your deal?
I'm an independent journalist, fancy way of saying I'm a freelancer, have no staff job, but my work sits at the intersection of sports, gender, and culture broadly, and I'm the co-author of Hail Mary, The Rise and Fall of the National Women's Football League.
It's a great book. Everybody should check it out, especially if you're into women's sports. So a little birdie tells me that you're kind of an expert about Taylor Swift. Do you want to talk about how that happened?
I am. It's like kind of against my own will, but here I am. I, last summer, attended Camp Gaylor, which was a weekend-long camp for queer Taylor Swift fans. And I wrote about it for Cosmo, wrote a whole feature about it. But in order to do that, I kind of had to submerge myself in the world of Taylor Swift and queer Taylor Swift fans. And in the aftermath of that story, I have continued to kind of follow, also through osmosis, because you can't really escape Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of stuff, but I would say that I ended up being sort of weirdly defensive of this like little group of Gen Z queer people and have ended up weighing in on a bunch of stuff publicly as a result, because I don't know, I don't like when I feel like people are wrong about things.
Yeah. Like you said, you can't escape the Taylor Swift domination of the world, if you will. Like my own older daughter is obsessed with Taylor Swift, so you know, whenever she's around, I can't escape it myself. But it seems like over the last couple of months, at least to me as like a lay person who very reluctantly consumes pop culture, she's kind of everywhere, right? Like, she started dating this NFL player, Travis Kelce. She started showing up at games, and I've heard a lot of people, I don't watch the NFL, but I've heard a lot of people are complaining about the camera time that she gets when she's at the games. The right wing has sort of developed this weird obsession with her, which I don't think is recent. I think that kind of goes back quite a bit of time. We'll get into that a little bit later. Tell me about the Gaylor stuff, right? Because I'm not as familiar. I know the New York Times published something that didn't get received very well in sort of the aftermath of the Kelce relationship.
Yeah. So the thing to know about Gaylor or Gaylorism is it's a fan theory, and it started on Tumblr years ago. We're talking somewhere between 2012, 2014, I'd say, is like how far back this theory goes. And the thing about Gaylor, just like any theory, any conspiracy theory, any belief, it's a spectrum, right? And so on one end of the spectrum, you have simply people who are doing a queer reading of Taylor Swift's art. That's not really any different than what you'll find in like any English Lit 101 class. It's a pretty standard thing. People have been doing queer readings of art for, you know, forever. The other end of that spectrum, and I think this is the end that tends to get a lot of the heat and that tends to get kind of projected onto Gaylorism as a whole, is people who really believe that Taylor Swift, everything she does, is sending out these very coded messages about her queerness, and right down to like who every single one of her songs is supposedly about. Like, they speculate on who her muses are, and it's very, very intense. I understand why there's backlash, to that. I'd say where some of the backlash gets complicated is that when the entire, like, fandom as a whole gets grouped into this, these people are delusional or, like, crazy, we tend to kind of wade into sort of homophobic waters about, like, when queerness was a mental illness and, like, all of that. So I take issue, I think, with wide swaths of, you know, queer folks who are fans of an artist being called delusional. That's never going to sit right with me. Mm-hmm. But just like any theory, you're going to have kind of people at both ends of the spectrum.
Gotcha. Okay. I know that people kind of were put off by speculating about a person's sexuality. I know that's kind of awkward territory in popular culture anyway.
So I think let's talk about it in the context, right, of the response to the New York Times op-ed, because I think that's what really brought this into mainstream discussion. Mm-hmm. I will say that it was really interesting to me to see some of the really harsh responses to that, particularly from other journalists, because from my point of view, most of that op-ed was really, really well sourced and was literally just quoting song lyrics that Taylor Swift wrote or pointing out things that she's worn or done. And I think the thing to remember about Gaylor theories that gets often erased and I think is actually really important is that Taylor Swift herself has literally given interviews to like Entertainment Weekly saying, "I plant Easter eggs, which are hidden messages. Places you should look for those Easter eggs are my clothing, my nail polish, my music videos, my stage visuals, my lyrics." So she's inviting this kind of deep dive and implying to her fans that there are hidden messages to be found. Mm-hmm. And so then to call people kind of, you know, crazy or delusional for doing what the artist has actually invited, I think erases Taylor Swift's kind of role in a lot of this.
Yeah, and didn't her people sort of make a comment about the article or in reference to all of this?
Yeah, so my last thought I will say about the article itself is I thought it did a pretty good job of sticking just to like things you can point to that Taylor Swift has done or said. Obviously, there are some places where the writer applied her own lens and speculated a little bit, but she was writing an opinion piece. And so I think that that's pretty natural. What the piece did not do is name any potential muses. It was very deliberately like museless. And I think that that was really important. And I think that that's an important boundary. And I think that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Did Taylor Swift's people come out against it? I don't know. Depends who you ask. Here's where things get real weird. Because if, you know, an associate, the quote was, an associate of Taylor Swift was upset about the article. Not Taylor Swift was upset about the article. And so I think this is where reporting gets really interesting and we have to pay attention to the kind of the words that are used and things like that.
Yeah. And you got some backlash yourself, right, in all of that?
Yeah, a little bit. I think my main point kind of is always going to be that when we talk about whether it's wrong or like offensive or bad to speculate on someone's sexuality, I want to know what we mean by that. Because when we speculate that the like female movie star who is at lunch with her male co-star is potentially dating him, we are speculating about those people's sexuality, and we speculate about straight people's sexuality all the time. The only reason that we would imply that it was harmful to speculate about someone's sexuality if they're queer is if we think being queer is bad or negative in some way. To me, it's morally neutral to observe that two people seem really close and wonder if they're dating. It's a neutral observation. When we apply positive or negative to it, I think it actually reveals something about what we're actually saying about what it means to be queer.
That's a really eloquent way of putting it.
Thanks. I've thought about this a lot.
This is why people tune into my podcast, is because I'm an idiot and my guests are really smart. So...
Caitlin, I love you. Your guests should know that we are friends. We've been friends a very long time.
We haven't hung out in a very long time, though, and we should fix that at some point soon. But, you know, depression and stuff gets in the way, at least on my side. So Okay, I'm just going to ask this, right? As an annoyed layperson of American culture, why the fuck am I being told about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift all the time?
Okay, I mean, there's a long answer and a short answer. I would also like to make it stop, for the record. I think we are, as a Taylor Swift fan, I am, we are the overexposure place. I think what is happening here is that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce hit on a couple things in American culture that just sort of, first of all, they're like white and attractive and rich and famous. And we are always...
I'll be honest, I never heard of Travis Kelce before this whole thing. So okay. I would argue the famous part on his side.
My favorite TikTok trend that came out of this whole thing was women trolling their male partners by being like, can you believe that nobody knew who Travis Kelce was before Taylor Swift? And the men are so furious. It's incredible content. I just like really loved it.
that's amazing.
I mean, you know, though, a certain segment of the population did know who he was, but like, obviously, like you said, a bunch of people did not, but him and his brother now have like the number one podcast on Spotify in sports podcasts, and his jersey sales are up, you know, 3,000% or whatever the hell, so people know who he is now. But so I think, right, we don't have royalty in this country, but there's something about Taylor Swift, who I don't think it is hyperbole to say is the most famous person in the world right now. Her tour that she just came off of is the highest grossing tour of all time. It's made her a billionaire. I mean, like, that's just one little statistic. I could give you 900 more that I'm not going to. The point being, like, I don't think it's out of, you know, bounds to put her on that level and say she's potentially the, you know, the most famous person in the world right now. And she has always had a disproportionate interest on her dating life. You know, she's criticized that for a long time in her career. She was in the news for which man she was dating more than she was anything to do with her music. She's also coming out of a long-term relationship with a man that was entirely private. During the 6 years that she was with Joe Alwyn, they never made a public appearance together. The only photos of them together were like pap walks, you know, on the beach. They never said each other's names in interviews. Like, we're talking really, really, really quiet. And so now the public is having access to something that they didn't have before, and it's something that historically people have been very obsessed with when it comes to Taylor Swift. She's very good at looking like she's giving us a lot. It's very interesting if you look at how much we think we know about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, because they're so public, but it's all very kind of empty. I don't think I could tell you a single thing they actually like do together or like about each other. You know, it's very smart. So I think that is a huge part of this. And then you have the NFL and like football, which we can call baseball America's pastime, but it's really football. And I have a lot to say about that, right? So there's something very cliche about the big pop star and the football player. It's very like Americana.
It's funny you say Americana, because the closest analog I can think of is David Beckham and Posh Spice, and Victoria Beckham. I don't know if you saw the Netflix documentary series, which I thought was excellent.
I adore them.
Yeah, so I actually have never been the biggest fan, and I came from, you know, soccer fandom. Right. So, like, I knew who David Beckham was before he married a Spice Girl. But it's interesting because there's not like the fame. I feel like with that relationship, there wasn't the fame mismatch, right? Like, David Beckham was very famous as a footballer, as a, you know, soccer player playing for England. He's the captain of the English national team. I think that was after they started dating, but obviously the Spice Girls were internationally known. So I felt like they were more like balanced on fame levels, and I don't get it. I don't get that feeling here.
No.
Because I had never heard of Travis Kelce, and I'm like sort of allegedly a sports fan, right? But like people who know football know him because they do like fantasy football. Like they tune
and he's
in.
Won a bunch
like,
of Super Bowls. So.
The NFL is like soap opera for men, basically.
Okay, but here's what's interesting. Yes, there's this fame mismatch. Although I would argue that maybe almost anyone would have a fame mismatch next to Taylor Swift. Like she's that big. But Travis Kelce has been trying to get famous for a very long time. And there was a New York Times piece that came out a month or two ago from his team that was basically like, our goal has always been to make Travis Kelce a household name. And I will say that that piece didn't do a lot for the people who already think this is a PR relationship. Like, now, I think it's important when we talk about PR, because this is a PR relationship, even if they're actually dating. Whether they're actually dating and really into each other, like, great, good for them, or whether it's some sort of a, you know, contractual relationship, to me doesn't actually matter. To whether or not it's PR, because we can look at the way they're using it, right? Mm-hmm. Again, to contrast what she did with Joe Alwyn, there is a way to keep your relationship private. They're not doing that. They are so public. They're giving interviews about each other. Their team is leaking stories. She's showing up at games. They're kissing on the field. You know, this is a choice. It's a choice to use the relationship in this way and to make it visible, the way they're making it visible. Mm-hmm. So it is PR in that way. And Travis Kelce has spent the last, honestly, like 10 years trying to become a household name. And so I think while there was a fame mismatch, he is somebody that would have been open to her level of celebrity and really embraced it and not be afraid of it.
So we're recording this the day after the Grammys, when Taylor Swift became a record breaker. Again, I don't follow music. People listening are like, Jesus Christ, Caitlin, you're so boring. But
look, we all have our things. My autistic special interest happens to be Taylor Swift. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I have anything, it's like esports, which
I know nothing about. So
yeah, it's really interesting. We should talk about that sometime, because I think there's some themes that you would appreciate. But that's a different show. We're coming off the Grammys. We're going into Super Bowl weekend, where I'm assuming Taylor Swift is going to attend and be on camera just as much as the players.
Flying from her Tokyo show, there's been press, including at ESPNW, which is presumably a sports website, about whether she'll make it in time. I have no patience for this.
Didn't like the embassy of Japan or something release something along those lines about like the whole thing is just
I hate it so much. It's fine. Whatever.
Too much for me. But like this is arguably the like zenith of Kelce Swiftdom.
Yeah, the NFL. Look what the NFL has done. We have gossip bloggers talking about this relationship. We have sports websites talking about this relationship. We have feminist websites talking about this relationship as we defend Taylor Swift from not having ruined football. We have right wingers losing their mind, and you know what no one is talking about? Boycotting the NFL, or the giant Washington Post investigation about the concussion crisis that just dropped last week. Look at that. The NFL the NFL got everyone, and Taylor Swift helped.
Yeah, it's, and here we are on my show talking about this, and that really pisses me off.
What did I say to you before we started? Class solidarity above all else. The billionaires helping billionaires stay rich.
Where's the Super Bowl this year? Las Vegas?
I think so.
Speaking of billionaires, but I like helping billionaires stay rich.
This is, I pay attention to, you know, the things. I'm also a sports writer, and I don't actually know where the Super Bowl is this year. I think it's Vegas.
I am not sure if I'm going to watch, actually. I haven't watched the last couple, but, you know, that's just me.
My partner wants to watch, so we will. But if it was up to me, I wouldn't be watching. I haven't watched the NFL for a long time.
Have you ever heard my Super Bowl rant?
No, but I love a rant. This does seem like the appropriate show for a Super Bowl rant.
I high-key can't stand the Super Bowl because my birthday is on February 6th. It's actually the day after we're recording this. Oh, and Super Bowl week is almost always. Yes.
I love you.
I carry everybody's water, apparently. I don't know how it works.
We can talk about that later. Because another special interest of mine, astrology.
The Super Bowl almost always happens in my birthday week, right? I remember one year, this was really early into my relationship with my ex. We were going to have a Super Bowl / birthday party for me because the Super Bowl was on my birthday. This was like back in college, and I had three friends because I went to three different colleges and never stayed long enough to like make really good friends with people, and nobody showed up to it. They all had Super Bowl party plans.
Nobody showed up to my bachelorette party. I wrote about it for Cosmo.
Did you?
But I had a birthday. I have a birthday that's always during Hanukkah, and I'm Jewish, so that sort of matters. But in college, it was always during finals week, so no one would drink with me, which I thought was a real, like, bitch move.
Yeah, it's like...
Sorry for my misogyny there, but I was an alcoholic.
I mean... I liked the Super Bowl as a kid because I was like, this is embarrassing, but I was a 49ers fan growing up because I really liked Joe Montana.
That's right. Hey, they're in the Super Bowl this year. You could have rooted against.
Oh, are they? I wouldn't know. And then like I grew up in upstate New York and the Giants won and then the Cowboys were good and I just couldn't stand the Super Bowl ever since then. Like there's no magic in it anymore.
I'm from South Florida, so I grew up a Dolphins fan. Oh, we did have Dan Marino sorry. When I was a kid, though, so it was like the last time ever that they were any good.
So I just like have vaguely been seething about the Super Bowl for like decades.
It's a spectacle. I
like
mean...
my ex's family would have Super Bowl / birthday parties for me where we'd watch like the Pats just roll over whichever team they were playing.
So the birthday party for you was tacked on. It was actually just a Super Bowl party, right?
Exactly. Yes. And I'm very petty and I resent it.
I can't wait to do the rest of your chart later.
Okay, let's talk. You mentioned this earlier, but let's talk about the right wing bullshit that's happening with all of this. Like, I've heard some pretty wild conspiracy theories that, like, Taylor Swift is actually a Biden psyop. Like,
it's incredible, Caitlin. I'm kind of like obsessed with it because if we're gonna call all of the very extreme gaylers like delusional conspiracy theorists, we also like let's talk about this conspiracy because
like okay, so like my question is what the fuck? Where did this come from?
Okay, well, it's been fed by the fact that there was a joke like last year by a former NFL player about how the NFL is like scripted, like the outcomes and whatever. And so the right wing has sort of like taken this and run with it. But I think it's also important to understand Taylor Swift in the context of some of this, like historically that this has kind of been building for a long time because... Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people probably know that she came out, to use some terms, as a Democrat in 2018. And, you know, in her documentary, Miss Americana, which is about basically that, it really largely looks at her decision to be open about her politics and, like, take a stand for some stuff that she cares about.
Yeah.
Her, you know, publicist says to her, I have to prepare you for what could happen if you do this, and I think the first thing you need to know is that the president could come for you. And she's like, yeah, let him, right? And he does. But let's rewind even further and look at Taylor Swift's first few albums, which were country albums. Taylor Swift was the darling of the country music scene. She debuted at 16 years old, and had this very wholesome image that really sung songs about the things that a teenage girl is going to sing about, romance and Romeo and Juliet and the guy on the football team and these very simplistic sort of, you know, narratives because...
Wow, everything comes full circle.
She's 16, right? Yes, it does. I have thoughts about that we don't need to get into here because she is re-recording all of her first six albums and debut still has not been re-recorded. And anyway, that's real like tinfoil hat level stuff. But let's go back though to that was who Taylor Swift was, this sort of all-American girl next door, white, blonde, pretty, straight, singing about these fairy tale romances and stuff. And when she left country music in 2014, she released 1989, which was her first album to explicitly say this is pop. Not country, not country pop, pop. I'm in the pop genre. Country music was furious, Caitlin. They, like, wouldn't say her name at awards shows anymore. They, like, took down plaques that had her name on them in Nashville. Like, it was a big deal. They felt very, very betrayed. So if you think about who the base of country music is, there is this very conservative political environment there. And so we can actually look at this right-wing turn against Taylor Swift. I think you can actually put it as starting when she made the choice to leave country music. Then she comes out as a queer ally. She comes out in favor of racial justice. She endorses Democrats. She angers Donald Trump. So this has been building. She's a feminist. She wins a sexual assault lawsuit in court, right? Like, this stuff, I think, has been building for a really long time. And she endorsed Biden in 2020. And so here kind of it all comes together with this current moment and the way that her and Travis Kelce have really kind of taken up the spotlight. And remember, Travis Kelce, like, made commercials for the COVID vaccine and is also, you know, progressive, maybe a strong word, but let's go with it, is openly at least liberal. So they both are openly liberal and they are being worshipped in this way. And I think that's a real threat to conservative politics.
It feels like right wingers and country music in general have this sort of entitlement to her, like, and it's very similar to how they feel entitled to all sorts of things related to women, right? Like, they feel entitled to define what a woman is. They feel entitled to define what a woman's role is in society. And I think very much like coming up, she was that, you know, blonde haired, you know, pretty racial ideal, if you will, if I'm going to go there, for these right wingers, right? And to see her then not turn out to be that, like, I saw on Twitter, there was this guy who was like, Taylor Swift is 34 years old or whatever. I don't know if exactly if that's what it was, but Taylor Swift is 34 years old. And even if they start now, they can only have like maximum two kids. She's basically like washed or whatever. Like she's like past her prime. I'm like, dude, like if we're talking dating levels, like you're not even at the level where you can like sniff her farts. Okay. Like get out of here.
That's my favorite is all the people being like, Taylor Swift is a six. And I'm like, sir, I saw again, let's talk about TikTok. I saw this TikTok where it was pictures of of men saying like how ugly Taylor Swift is. And then it just cut to their profile pictures.
Oh no. Just like, oh man. Oh, holy shit. No. Roasted.
Not only that, I think a lot of people probably don't realize actually, if you listen to Taylor Swift's music, she sings quite a lot about not wanting to be somebody's bride and not wanting to be married and not wanting to buy into what she calls like 1950s shit. Mm-hmm. She really does talk quite a lot about that in her music. And so it's to project onto her even the idea, like even her fans that are immediately projecting an engagement, it, like the minute they start dating or, you know, making AI generated images of what their children will look like.
Yeah, that's
let's talk about speculation. No, it's the gay people that are crazy, right?
That's wild. I have no comment. I'm speechless.
It's so weird.
It's all sort of culminating in like this weekend, right? With the Super Bowl. And this episode is going to get released on Thursday. So when you're on your way to a Super Bowl party, it's the perfect time to like listen to this show so you're ready.
I mean, it's interesting to me. Taylor Swift has kind of entered her, like, WAG era, you know? She is befriending all of the other wives and girlfriends, which, like, mad respect. I also, though, you know, Taylor Swift is a girl's girl. The one thing I'm going to give Taylor Swift is, like, she is a girl's girl. She rides really hard and really deep for her female friends. And they, to me, are, like, probably the great loves of her life. If you look at the way she shows up in public with the women she's friends with, I'm not going to speculate on whether any of them are dating or not. You know, there also is, I think, you know, I think the thing that I can say about Taylor Swift, I don't know about her dating life. But the way she is with her female friends really feels like queer platonic friendship to me. At the very least, there's such an intimacy and like such a level of physical affection that they show in public. It's very clear that she values those friendships quite a lot. She's an Aquarius Venus, so am I. And it's a very like friendship oriented kind of thing. And you see that. You see that a lot in her music too. However, this is the other side of the coin is like, so she's, like, hanging out with Brittany Mahomes, but she's also hanging out with Jackson Mahomes, and he had, like, an open sexual assault case for most of that time. And we're just, like, not talking about that, are we, you know? Yeah. And she's been so, like, ride or die for survivors. Again, we've got, usually, I think, leading up to the Super Bowl, we have people being, like, I'm not watching this year because Colin Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. I'm not watching this year because the concussion crisis. I'm not watching this year because of domestic violence. Whatever it is, I feel like we've, over the last few years, there's been a lot of people really talking about boycotting the NFL, and that conversation is pretty much non-existent right now. And I think it's honestly, the NFL leaned hard into this Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce narrative, and I think it was like genius, and I think it has worked.
Yeah. I mean, I'm boycotting the NFL because I find the sport boring. But that's just me. I am the one American.
You're not. I wrote a whole book about football and like don't really know much about football. And these the women, for people that are listening that don't know, I wrote about a women's football league in the 1970s. It was the first professional women's football league in the U.S., like a league of their own, but openly gay, racially integrated, and football is how I would. Anyway, the women, who are basically just a bunch of like elder butch lesbians, they're incredible. They love football, obviously. And to this day, several years later, they still text me on Sundays to like tell me their like takeaways from the week, and I do not have the heart to tell them that I don't know who any of the players they're mentioning are, and I haven't seen a game all season.
That's hilarious.
I'm just like, yes, definitely. I was a cheerleader. I think I know like first and 10, do it again. That, you know, that's flip. You know what? We don't give cheerleaders enough credit. They have to understand the game to know what cheers to call on the sidelines. So I do understand the game. I just...
I was just thinking to, like, all the times that we hung out at, like, your house, and it was always baseball that was on.
Yeah. I got into sports writing because of baseball, and then I got really sick of covering athletes who probably hate me as a person, and that's when I really focused on women's sports.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to sort of wrap this conversation. I think we covered all of this madness very well. But for our listeners who want to continue to follow your work, like where can they find you?
I am on most social media at the Frankie DLC, but social media is also dying, and so you can subscribe to my Substack, which is called Out of Your League, and it is also the frankiedlc.substack.com. So I'm eventually moving off Substack, but it's been a very slow process, so you could probably find me there for quite a while longer.
I'll include links to that in the show notes as well. Okay, Frankie, are you ready for out of context cancellations?
Yes.
If you're unfamiliar with this segment, these are all listeners submitted. They submit through our Discord, and you can become a Discord member by supporting our Patreon at the $5 a month level or more. But the first thing we're going to cancel is, and this is very specific, we are canceling people who make checkboxes and radio buttons indistinguishable from each other, and we're going to cancel Apple for joining them.
You were not kidding when you said incredibly specific.
Yes.
This is one person who had a pet peeve and yes. really, really wanted to hear us cancel
yes.
this specific thing, which, you know, I respect quite deeply.
Next, we're going to cancel Vince McMahon from the WWE, who I know is in the news, and I refuse to read why.
And yeah. Do you want me to tell you why?
No, I would rather not have the context.
Yeah. It's not good. How about that?
No, I know it's not good. But these are out of context cancellations.
Great.
Another very specific one. We are canceling people who listen to the radio or TV with the mic on just prior to the start of a Zoom call.
Okay.
Which I just think is awesome. Like,
well, now I'm someone, like, is that me?
Someone very clearly was on a Zoom call where this happened, and they like specifically logged into my Discord to complain about it. And I just think that's great.
Yes.
Next, we're canceling greedy corporate policies that pretend employers aren't responsible for providing cost of living pay increases.
Again, very specific. Someone was upset.
Yeah. I mean,
with good reason.
Understandably. Yeah. But this is like our social justice cancellation of the day, I think.
Yeah.
Also, if you'd like to help me with a cost of living pay increase, it's patreon.com/cancelmedaddy. Anyway.
You can also subscribe to a paid version of my Substack, Out of Your League.
Oh, holy crap. Okay. And lastly, we are canceling California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Sure.
No specific reason why, just that he's a spineless coward.
An establishment politician is enough for me.
A Mitt Romney for centrist Democrats.
All right.
Which I love. I love my little community. They are so great. It's curious he didn't run for president this cycle, because I think he actually would have had a chance. Hmm. But I think that it's really taboo to run against an incumbent, so he just didn't do it. You can send in your own out-of-context cancellations by supporting our show on Patreon. There are also other great perks, like getting your episodes early, and your support helps me pay my editor, who is really wonderful, and without whom you would not get the show every other week. And you can learn about all of that at patreon.com/cancelmedaddy. Frankie, so much for coming on the show. This is a real pleasure. I had so much fun. We should catch up privately, but also this is really fun.
It was. We should. I'm going to do your chart after we get off. So I'm excited.
I almost want to record that and make it a bonus episode. Today's show was made by me, Caitlin Burns, and my amazing editor, Maria Paleologos. D. Peterschmidt made our theme song, and Eden M.W. designed our graphics. Our show is made possible by the incredible cancelers supporting our work, especially the members of our Canceler Hall of Fame, with the great power to cancel all of their enemies. Meg, we appreciate your support. Happy canceling!